on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. You might have noticed a lot of red ribbons popping up the past few days on posters and in ads. The red ribbon is the international symbol for HIV/AIDS awareness. Next Tuesday is World AIDS Day, started back in 1988 at the depths of the epidemic. World AIDS Day is a chance for people to take stock of how we're doing in the 30-plus year battle against the human immunodeficiency virus and the syndrome of life-threatening illnesses its victims can fall prey to. Being diagnosed HIV positive is no longer the death sentence it once was, but getting treatment to everyone who's infected and curbing the spread of the disease are still major challenges in cities like Baltimore, where new HIV infections among certain groups are on the rise. Dr. Patrick Chalk is the Assistant Commissioner for HIV and STD, or Sexually Transmitted Diseases, in the Baltimore Health Department, and he joins me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to meet you, and happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
So the AIDS epidemic is sort of hardly really in the news today. I mean, there was a TV actor who announced last week that he was HIV positive, but there are highly effective pre- and post-exposure drugs now that didn't exist when the epidemic first started. It can make it, you know, a chronic as opposed to a fatal disease. But we should be clear, the virus that causes AIDS has not yet been vanquished, has it?
No, it hasn't. The numbers are going down in Baltimore. That's really the good news. Since about 2008, we've had fewer new infections each year up till our last complete database is 2013. And we don't think that's due to not testing enough people. We, in fact, test a lot in the city and have introduced a new campaign to increase testing from HIV in the private sector, in doctors' offices. It's called Protect Baltimore, and we use what are called public health detailers who go out and visit practices and bring a kit to provide information and testing information and billing information to help them put HIV testing as a routine practice in their care.
So you're comfortable that you're getting good data, that you're getting complete data and a real picture?
Yeah, I would give you a good example is maybe only 3 or 4 years ago, we did 25 tests to find a new infection. And last year, it was 60 tests to find a new infection. So we're trying to reach in both the at-risk populations, but also, as I just mentioned, to make this more routine in the general population as well as part of primary medical care.
So generally speaking, rates of HIV are going down, but there are certain communities where that's not the case. Who are those communities?
There's two good examples. One is the injection drug using community, and in that population has gone down dramatically because of our syringe exchange program in the city. So it's gone from what roughly used to be 60% of new infections down to 18% of new infections. On the other hand, the rise is largely among the men who have sex with men, gay men population, primarily young African-American men. And that last year or the year before, about 42% of the new infections were in that population. So that's become a new focus for all of us.
So how do you explain the rise in infection rates among those particular groups? I mean, information about HIV/AIDS, the importance of having protected sex as opposed to unprotected sex has been known for 30 years.
Yeah, I think there are lots of reasons. It's sort of complicated. Number one, young gay black men are least likely to know their HIV status, meaning they're least likely to get tested, so they don't know their infection, and they can spread it more easily to others. Number two, if they do know their status, they're least likely to be linked to care. And if they actually make it into care, they're least likely to stay in care. So if they don't stay in care, their viral load doesn't become suppressed, meaning that they would become almost uninfectious to not being suppressed, making them still infectious. So they run the risk of spreading this among their own community.
About 6 weeks ago, a couple months ago, you got a $20 million grant from the CDC. The city of Baltimore got this grant to develop a new AIDS strategy. As I understand, it's going to concentrate less on changing behavior and more on testing and treatment. Do I have that right?
Pretty much, yeah. We'll still look at behavior. That's always going to be a piece of the education program, but it's very clear that that strategy hasn't done very well in the past. So there's a new strategy called PrEP, which is pre-existing prophylaxis. It's a two-drug, one pill that someone can take if they're HIV negative and at risk to be exposed to HIV. So that can apply both to people at risk because of their sexual practices, but it also can be used for what are called discordant couples, where the wife may be negative and the husband may be positive. And by taking that, she can protect herself from taking on HIV. But it's more than a pill. It's really a strategy. It's a plan that's comprehensive, that's going to look actually at behavior issues. One of the two grants is focused around wraparound services for populations that we're going to focus on. in this city, social economic injustice has really been a big key factor in a lot of health outcomes, but particularly HIV. So we see this as much about social equity and justice as it is about HIV infection.
Is there a risk when it comes to incentivizing people to get on this program? I mean, this is for people who are not yet positive, right?
Right.
And they have to take the pill every day,
yep.
Right? So they have to remember to do that, et cetera. They have to get the pills and all that stuff. Is there a risk that that could encourage risky behavior because they say, oh, I'm taking this pill, I'm covered?
It could, but we don't think it's going to change it that much. We're probably going to see a rise in sexually transmitted diseases outside of HIV because of this, and that's been seen in other studies that have looked at this. But think again that this is not something that you have to do lifelong. This is really while you're at your most at-risk behavior. And what we want to try and get people to do is to become more monosexual with the same person over a longer period of time. And once you develop that sort of attitude towards your sexual lifestyle, that can happen. I think another part of this campaign is to really trying to normalize sexual conversation. We haven't really done that in this country very well. And I think that's an important part to this. And I think that we're also going to be hiring people from this grant, from the community that we're targeting, because we want them to be part of the message that's going to be carried into the community. So it's a very novel approach by a city health department in that we are not doing what some of the other grantees are doing. We're actually creating a citywide collaborative partners, which have the faith community involved in it, the LGBT community, clinics, research centers, and the health department. So it's going to be a citywide comprehensive approach to HIV beyond just the PrEP part.
You mentioned that there are some folks who simply don't know their status. They don't know whether or not they're infected. There's one report that calls it almost as many as 1 in 5 of the 13,000 people who are HIV positive here in the city don't know they're infected. So how do you reach them?
Well, part of this is the campaign to move this into the private sector, and part of it's the social marketing that we're going to be doing. We're not going to be using public health posters. We're engaging the target population to help us come up with the messages that we think that will reach them. So, for example, a couple years ago, we created a campaign called Status Update, and this was targeted basically to the House and Ball gay black men's community. And they created their own posters, their own campaign, and that, in fact, has proven to be extremely effective in reaching this group. And we actually had one of our mini balls just this last Saturday where we had over 600 people attend and about 100 people get tested for HIV.
Yeah, they call it the Status Ball,
yep,
right?
And, exactly.
And the whole point of it is to know what your status is.
Right, and you covered this a couple of years ago, so we were happy with that.
Yeah, I remember we did that story. It was a lot of fun. With things like heroin addiction on the rise, and Dr. Nguyen has certainly been at the forefront of a national movement to address that very difficult problem. Governor Hogan has a very vested interest in this as well. Does HIV transmission increase? I mean, you mentioned the sterilization, the needle sharing programs, the anti-sharing programs.
Right.
But do you expect one is going to be tied to the other?
Well, not necessarily. Part of the epidemic around overdose is heroin, but a lot of it's prescription pain medicines. And for a lot of people, that's exactly where it starts. They get to being given large prescriptions of numerous pain medicines and get hooked on that, and then they go to heroin because it's cheaper. So there are all kinds of crazy things that are happening around prescription medications. I heard a assistant commissioner from Quincy, Massachusetts talk, and the new thing they're dealing with up there is open houses. So people who are hooked go to open houses that are where the house is being sold, but they go to the kitchen or the bathroom cabinet and look for prescription medicines that they can steal. So it's a complicated situation, and it's clearly not linked just to Baltimore. We're seeing this all over the country. So we're trying to do outreach to both emergency departments and private physicians to adjust prescribing practices. We have the Don't Die campaign that the mayor and the health commissioner have launched. And then we also have a overdose naloxone training, which is the medicine that's given to reverse an overdose. So that's a large citywide campaign that we have going on as well. So it's multifaceted, just like the problem is.
But do you think it will have much of an impact on the efforts to stem the spread of HIV/AIDS?
Well, again, our syringe exchange effort is the one that's really doing the most work on that. And as yet, we haven't seen a change. It's been a steady decline every year. Even when overdose deaths have gone up, we haven't seen any change in HIV due to injection drug use.
The TV actor Charlie Sheen announced last week that or admitted after keeping it quiet for a long time that he had been diagnosed as HIV positive. It brought to the fore the notion of the stigma that's attached with being HIV positive. Is there also a stigma attached to taking the PrEP drug, for example, for being involved in this new program? And if so, how does one, as a city health department, how do we overcome that stigma?
Well, I think our work with the community is going to help address that because that is an important point. But I also would like to reinforce that that when people think HIV is not stigmatizing, Charlie Sheen is the poster boy for that. He spent millions of dollars to try and conceal his HIV infection, and if it weren't stigmatized, he wouldn't be doing that. So if that can happen to an actor, one has to understand what it must look like in a poor black person who's unemployed and has a very unstable life. So we really have to take that into consideration when we're doing this.
You mentioned this is a new and novel approach. It's even an approach that a lot of other cities are not following. What exactly are you trying to fix about the approach from previous efforts?
Well, right now we have excellent treatment once you become infected. There's about six classes of antiviral drugs and about 30 drugs in that group of drugs. So once you've become infected, we actually have great work that can take care of that. What we haven't done is to do the taking care of the exposure and the risk before that. And that's largely what this is intended to do, is to complement those who are infected and those who are not infected, so we have sort of a continuum of activities that address all aspects of HIV.
I also want to talk about the transgender community. Mm-hmm. That's another special community that has had to grapple with this. In the past, the health department's had a tough time reaching.
Well, yeah, we actually have transgender members for our HIV planning group, which is a citywide planning group that works on HIV, and we've done lots of outreach to the transgender community throughout the city of Baltimore. There's a group that voluntarily comes together on Friday nights called TAG that reaches out into one of the areas of the city where lots of transgenders exist, and that's also a target population for our PrEP work as well. We actually have recruited some transgenders to work with the faith community to change the faith view of transgenders. They're clearly a more hidden portion of the sexual minority community, and we're doing a lot to reach out to them because that is a very important population. Studies show that anywhere from 30% to 60% of transgenders are HIV positive.
Dr. Patrick Chalk is the Baltimore Health Department's Assistant Commissioner for HIV and STD Services. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks so much
for coming in. Thanks for inviting us.
We've got more information about the Baltimore Health Department's HIV services on our website. Come to wipr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Ahead on this pre-Thanksgiving edition of Maryland Morning, some music by a brand new band and a musical legend. After a break for news, Charm City Junction will play us a few foot stomping tunes. And a little bit later on, I'll talk to the one and only Judy Collins. Stay with us. Here's Nathan.